Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. And I come your way Sundays. Used to be Saturdays, now it's Sundays. 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. on Sunday, Monday morning at 1 a.m. Podcasts are at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we stream live at richarddugan.com. It's not that difficult to find. Just look for my bald, hatted, bearded face. And click on it, and away you go to listening to the live stream at 7 a.m. or 7 p.m. Pacific time, and 1 a.m. Monday morning Pacific time as well. And today we're going to go down a road that hopefully will be encouraging, enlightening, and all of the good things that come with this program. But we're going to be dealing, I think we will be delving into a subject that it's a little difficult for this country to deal with. It always seems as though when things of this nature happen, the rest of the world looks at us and goes, "Are you people serious? You're having such a brouhaha over this subject, or at least not so much over the subject per se, but over the abuse of, if you will, misuse of this subject we're going to get into." I'm very excited to have this conversation because it is an important one. We're going to be talking with, so to speak, the creator of the succulent revolution. Her name is Saida Desolet, and I want to thank you so much for joining us all the way from Australia.
That's right. I'm so excited to be here today. Thank you so much, Richard, for being open to have this really profound conversation.
Sexuality, not sex, but sexuality has always been a problem for Americans and the West. And maybe it is just America, because I don't know that that Central or South America or Canada, maybe Canada does, seems to have a problem with this subject. I remember there were some elections in Italy. There was a porn star that was running for public office. You know,
yes.
And it wasn't really a big deal, except here where we made all kinds of hay about it. I have to say that, you know, I'm going to get this out of the way real quickly. I was extremely upset over the fact that Bill Clinton was impeached, not over misuse of power or obstruction of justice or anything of that nature dealing with the presidency, but lying about a relationship he had with an intern. And I'm sitting here going, then why didn't you kick him out of office? I never understood that. But the fact that he lied and then he got caught in his own perjury, and I'm just sitting here thinking, we waste so much time on dealing with these kinds of issues. And I know that we're going to have to delve into the latest 2017 into 2018 issues that are foremost both in our political realms as well as our entertainment realms and others. Because it's there, but I'm hoping that you, Desiree, Saida, will be able to help us to understand not what's going on, but understand how we can be better people through, if I'm correct in the connection here, the succulent revolution.
Yes, Richard, and I'm so delighted that we can have the conversation headed towards creativity. And I agree with you completely. I find that the way that we handle topics around sexuality, body, pleasure, these types of topics, it's very bizarre. It's as though we're locked in a childhood relationship with it, and we haven't allowed ourselves to mature and have adult conversations about it. So I'm very excited to be here today. There is a very positive way that we can look at things. It will require a paradigm shift, which will be really interesting to discuss with you today. And it won't be that difficult, because for me, this paradigm shift is just simply a reorientation.
Now, some of the words, some of the terms that we might use here, we might want to define or redefine from your perspective, because this program is about what you're doing, what you're about.
Yeah.
One of those words that I'm looking at right now. For example, I'm quoting you and saying, I'm here to make you more succulent and connect you with your own innate erotic genius. All right. I have a fairly good idea what genius means, okay? I'm not a member of Mensa. Not that I've ever applied and don't know that they would accept me. But it's the word erotic.
Yes.
Words like erotic, intimacy, even the word pleasure. Let's start with the word erotic. What in this context of, and I'm going to keep repeating this throughout the program, I'm sure, in the context of the succulent revolution, does eroticism and so forth mean? What's the definition from your perspective?
Yeah, I love this. So what I love to do with words is let's get really simple because that will help. So genius, let's call that intelligence. Okay, so that's nice and easy. And then erotic, let's take it out of the hijacked version of it, which has been hijacked by the porn industry. So we have this strange relationship to it. But if you go back to the origins of Eros, it's the force of nature. It's that which animates life. So let's just call it aliveness. So then erotic genius would be the intelligence of your own aliveness, that which makes you feel alive. And that's a very important intelligence to engage, especially within the context of this conversation.
I know that there are a lot of folks who will have a little bit of a problem with what I'm about to share, but I have been in the last, I'm going to say 20 years, since I have been with my second wife, through some very intense and intimate programs in Arizona when we were living there.
Yep.
That dealt with both the actual physical relationship on a sexual and intimate level, but also dealt with the other aspects of the relations we share as a couple throughout our days, not just our nights.
Yes.
And it was fascinating. And it was from the Native American tradition.
Okay, great.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Deer Tribe.
I'm not familiar with them in terms of had direct experience, but I've heard of the Deer mm-hmm. Tribe, and I'm not sure if the teaching you were learning was called the Kwadoshka teachings.
Perfect. Yes, that's it. That's it right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was actually asked, and they have the recordings. I was asked to record those three levels. We went through all three levels and also participated. We get the recording going, and then you go off and you do the exercises. And it was incredible, the level of growth and of course, the understanding of both self as well as each other, and then the other people in the group that we participated with for 3 days, 3 evenings, and then two weekend days, full days. And I have to say that those kinds of experiences are incredible. Now, let's take a look at the cultural aspects of our sexuality in terms of other cultures. There are, for example, the big question that I've often asked of people on this program is, from your perspective, when does a male child become a man? And when does a female child become a woman? Well, in the Jewish tradition, you have 13. I don't know if it's the same for the girls or not. They have the mitzvah and the boys have the bar mitzvah at the age of 13. And it used to be in some tribes when the boy was taken away to learn the lessons and become a man, when he came back, they treated him like a man. But in the United States, in the modern age, you don't know where that dividing point is anymore in terms of what it is you're going to experience. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. You've brought up so many things, and I'm so excited about this conversation. So I'm glad we have a whole hour. So let's talk about how in the West we have disassociated through, I would think, cultural mandates, let's say, and social ideals, disassociated from our own body, from our own sexuality, and from our own sensuality. And I think some of that disassociation, of course, has a religious influence to it, so that we can't avoid that topic. It does come with that. But there's also plenty of people who are very devoted to their beliefs and also have healthy sexuality. So it can coexist. It's not separate from each other. Mm-hmm. The other is, as you said, other cultures have initiatory rites where the psyche, because in my line of work, so my PhD was devoted to examining the psychosexual nature of women and the impact that our different thoughts and beliefs and habits have on the health of that nature. In our culture, we don't enable the young to understand that there is a transition. And we don't even in ourselves understand that, you know what? Our genitals are connected to the rest of us. I mean, I like to joke about this sometimes. They'll say, guess what? Your genitals come with you when you go ask for a bank loan. They come with you when you go out to see the in-laws. They're just everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they participate in everything. And yet we pretend that our sexuality is something completely separate and something that only happens once in a while, mm-hmm. in a very specific way. So the initiation of the youth is very important. What I do see, Richard, is in small microclimates within the United States and Canada are groups of communities who do help. They do menses ceremonies for young women. So when women get their first cycle, mm-hmm. they have a ceremony, and it's not just women with women. So they'll have a circle where all the women will tell the young girl, this is what it means to be a woman, and they'll share their story. And then the men will come along and take that young woman and have a circle and say, here's what you can expect from a good man. And here's how the things that aren't okay. And they'll just educate her in that way. And I think it's amazing to have a young person suddenly feel like he or she has allies as they're going through a pretty difficult period of life. Teenagehood has been said to be a hormonal insanity period of life because the sex hormones are so high that sometimes it actually creates a schism where your reality really changes for you. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have the maturation process, if you don't have a way to honor this change and this transformation, then it's a little bit, you're left wondering what's going on, and then you get your information now, especially from the internet, from the porn industry, and from things that we actually don't really value culturally. So it's interesting because we don't provide it and we don't like what's actually available. And the truth is the youth do need guidance in that transformational process.
You know, I find it also interesting, too, that what you're teaching has to do with, and I believe this is a phrase that you have sort of coined to some degree, empowering women to claim their sexual sovereignty,
yes.
But also getting men to honor it. And I'm thinking, well, wouldn't it be better for you to have men claim their sexual sovereignty? Because if they did, in the context of what you are teaching, then they would honor a woman's sexual sovereignty. They wouldn't cross that line.
Yeah. So let's first define it in case the listeners are going, what
Please.
The hell?
Yeah.
Sexual sovereignty.
I have borders, right? And they're well-defined, and you are not to cross them unless you have a passport.
Exactly. So it's the authority and autonomy over your own body and your sexuality. And it is a human birthright. It's not strictly for women. It's all people, no matter what age, have the right to their own bodies and what happens with that body, whether a person would be, you know, engaged in touching or a medical procedure. We must, A, treat our own bodies with respect, but B, that we respect the bodies of others. And I agree with you. It is for both for men and women. My work is focus solely on women, which mm-hmm. is why that title was given.
But and it makes sense,
not,
yeah.
Concept does not exclude men at all. In fact, I agree with you completely. If both men and women could come into a place where, wow, look at this. I have this incredible body. I have this sensuality. And to me, I view sensuality as the way we make sense of reality. So yeah. Sensuality is an essential survival and thrival mechanism to a person. We must not actually turn it down or be ashamed of it. We must actually heighten it so that we're much more connected to what's going on around us in the world. Mm. And pleasure, you mentioned earlier, is essential for the what we'll call the optimal functioning of a human being. Pleasure, when the body feels good, your immune system functions better, your endocrine system functions better, the way the neurochemicals in your brain work, they function better. Everything functions better when we feel good. And yet we have this strange relationship with pleasure, where it's this thing we need to go and get and in exchange for something, like it's a commodity, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's a state of being. And it's not purely sexual. There is sexual pleasure, but then there's also just taking pleasure in a breath, taking pleasure in a scent. And those are all equal value to harnessing vitality in our bodies, making our bodies function optimally, and harnessing our genius, which is, as we mentioned at the start of the call, I do really believe that every person is born with a gift. And yet here we are in a culture that creates so much disassociation that we spend the majority of our time trying to fix ourselves or become something that is mandated by an external authority. So those things actually strip away our energy and our vitality and our focus. Instead of focusing on bringing our genius into the world, our gifts into the world, we're you know, doing this little neurotic dance with our own being. And as you said, other cultures are scratching their head going, what's going on over there? So I think it's really beautiful for a culture that has this choice, because it all comes down to choice, right, Richard?
That's right.
It's like, what are we going to choose? What's possible here? With all that's coming out, I feel that it's an incredible time. Right now, we're at this amazing moment of great change, and it will come with the individual making a choice. And that choice for me is as simple as being willing to just own the fact that I have a body and that I appreciate my body, and I'm willing to be at home in this body and to be responsible for my body.
I honestly couldn't have said it better myself. I think too, the culture in which we live certainly does not foster that. Hollywood doesn't foster being comfortable in your body. When I was in school, it wasn't there. When there were girls that again were still developing, they were still growing, just as the boys were. But if they were even slightly overweight, oh my Lord, the comments that were made. And I'll bet you, because I never kept up with them, I had other reasons not to follow my class through class reunions over the last 40 years, or 30 years. But I will bet you that the girls that I was growing up with in school are gorgeous women today. But we're all still morphing into what we're going to become. But we're not given any leeway. Now, I will actually amend my comment regarding Hollywood in terms of all of the physical changes that people choose to go through because they don't feel comfortable with the size of their nose, or their breasts, or their butt, or their arms, or whatever part of the body. And I used to really have a problem with that thing. What is going on? You just need to let it go and be comfortable with who and what you are. But I know that there are some other deep-seated issues going on there where they just don't. They flat out do not feel comfortable. So now I've amended my position to say, look, if you're not happy the way you look, then find a look that makes you happy. Because isn't that what we're all striving for, is to find... from the Declaration of Independence, pursuing happiness, isn't that what we're all looking for in not only ourselves, but in relationship?
Yes, and happiness it's actually essential in the sense of functionality in being a good society. Because when more individuals feel good, then they contribute more and our interactions are more creative. And it's just far more pleasant to be engaged with people. I don't see that in our current climate. I see a lot of us wanting and creating more separation. But I feel that it's a reflection of how we actually feel about ourselves, mm-hmm. that we're not connected to ourselves and we don't feel like we're enough or we don't feel like we're worthy of even self-care or making choices that are courageous, right? It's like being daring to be yourself. That's an act of rebellion right now. So I really feel that it's important for us. We all would thrive a little more to engage with our innate inborn courage. The self-esteem is inborn in a human being. We tend to erode that with conditioning, but it is innate within us. And creativity is also an incredible part of being a human being. So can we bring those elements more to the forefront instead of the fear and the judgment and the criticism and the shutting down and the hiding away? And so that's my query with individuals when I have the pleasure to speak with them and be with them and guide them, is how can we do this? What does it look like? And for me, part of it is being daring. I feel that apathy is what's actually really causing a lot of the dissonance that we're experiencing. Mm-hmm. And we've all always had to be daring as a species. We would not have survived if we weren't daring. So right now, I feel we need to re-engage this very natural attribute called being daring, and daring to love ourselves, daring to say no, daring to speak up, daring to know that what's in our heart, what we really yearn for in the secret part of our heart, that's viable and that we actually can go for that, even if it isn't in alignment with what our parents would want or our community would want. Mm-hmm. It does take daring to say yes to the calling that we feel within us. And I think that's amazing, Richard, because transformation on a global sense could happen when individuals realize that they matter, that their voice matters, their story matters, mm-hmm. and that their choices have impact. And so a lot of what I'm doing right now is just reminding everyone, you matter. Mm-hmm. Who you are is important. It doesn't matter the circumstances that you're surrounded by. The fact that you are here is enough.
Mm-hmm. And that you have something to contribute. Because exactly. You are here, by virtue of the fact that you are here, you have something to contribute. It's like, they say that if you're a naturalized, a natural-born citizen of the United States, you have all of this stuff that is just automatically given to you. Well, as a human being, if you exist, you matter and you have something to contribute. Now, let me cross a line here, so to mm-hmm. speak. In regards to, obviously, probably one of the biggest subjects on the table these days is the issue of transgender. And to me, I would take the same position if somebody does not feel comfortable in their, in the body that they came into this world with, and in terms of the gender, because it just doesn't fit. That has got, I've got to believe, too, that's something that you're dealing with as well. I mean, again, you say you mm-hmm. deal primarily with women. I understand that. Do you deal with this subject? And if so, how?
Yes, it comes up quite a bit, especially in conferences that are, 100 different women, it will still come up. So it is on the forefront of everyone's mind. And here's how I like to answer this question. We are innately sexual beings. We're not sexual doings. So our orientation, how we want to experience life, that's part of that sovereignty. I have no right to tell anybody how to live that part of their life. The only obligation I have is to question the social mandates that are forcing a person to live according to someone else's ideals and not living life on their own terms. If a person chooses that who they are is not the body that they came in with, that is their sovereign right to make that choice. My only concern is always to ask, is this coming from a very true and honest place within yourself, not as a reaction and not as a maybe even group pressure, which can happen in some instances, but as a true yes. And if it is a true yes, power to you. And that is true across the board with any orientation, with any way that people love to make love and to relate to their bodies, even if they're completely celibate. None of that is very concerning to me. The concern is more living a life that's predetermined by other or living life on your own terms.
I want to continue this conversation as we talk and learn more from you and about you. We want to find out more in that regard. And we're going to do that. Saida Desale is my guest, and we're talking about, again, the succulent revolution. I love the term because my own mind is going, oh, you can't say that. Succulent, really? We have succulent plants. I mean, I've got an aloe vera plant. It's a succulent. Well, why can't we live a succulent life? Well, stay tuned. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we have more to come. Don't go away, please.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. It's a succulent story. It's a sensual story. It's an intimate, erotic story. But it's still for everyone on the planet. Because, you know, you made a comment a little while ago, Saida, that, you know, we are sexual beings. And in my own personal studies, in terms of studying the ancient wisdom teachings and my own personal metaphysical growth, I have learned that nothing that does exist exists without the sexuality and even the sex, that everything that's been built by humans was built through that energy.
Yes, and you know what's incredible about sexual energy is that it creates life. That is a miracle. First there's nothing, and then there's something. To me, it's miraculous, and I have reverence for that kind of power and miracle. And when we come into relationship, so one of the things I did, Richard, I got really curious. I was like, here we are a culture that really does support physical maturation from a child body to an adult body. To a degree, we support mental maturation with school, getting children to really grow mentally and intellectually. And there is an extent of spiritual maturity process as well. Just we're exposed now in this time of life to many different ways of perceiving the world on a spiritual level. Where we have failed a little bit is our emotional maturity and our sexual maturity. So I was really curious, is there an evolutionary path, just like there is for physicality and intelligence, where we mature just organically, naturally, with nothing interfering with that? And I found that there were actually five different levels, you could call it, of erotic evolution in a person's life. So I would love to have just a moment to speak to that if you're open.
Go
to
for
that.
It. Go for it.
Great. So the first one is erotic innocence. And I think it's really important in our human collective to recognize that there is something called erotic innocence. Innocence means it makes no sense. We're not in mind. It's pure. We're just in direct experience. We're born like this. You look at a child, a baby, and they have the same relationship with their nose and their fingertips and their toes and their knees and their genitals. They're just connected to it all. It's all just amazing for them. So that's the erotic innocence piece. It's all beautiful and integrated in the child. At some point, sexual hormones kick in. Then we get the second level, which is erotic activation. We literally recognize, because our bodies are transforming, oh my goodness, there's something called sexuality and it's really intense. It has a lot of meaning, but there's also a lot of weird stuff around it because we're looking around in our environment and learning and growing. So that phase is the tweens and teens time. Mm-hmm. And then there's erotic exploration, which I think is so natural and so beautiful, of the young adult going, what am I? What do I like? Who do I like? How do I like sexuality? And we go to things like pornography or sex ed books or, you know, whatever's available to learn, like, what is this and what is that and how does this work? And I think that that phase is a crucial phase if we want the erotic part of us to continue to mature.
Now,
so avoiding that phase, unfortunately, it'll probably pop up later in life and then mm-hmm. it's less appropriate.
Yeah. But there are cultures, as we've talked culturally earlier, there are cultures in which the within the family or within the tribe or clan, whatever the name of the group you wish to put, there would be individuals, male and female respectively, who would take the opposite gender individuals once they have reached a certain age. They would take them out into the wilderness, so to speak, to teach them. And there was nothing inappropriate about this because this was part of the educational process of this particular, of these cultures.
Mm-hmm.
But
Absolutely.
We don't have what we have in school is sex ed, which is not. Now I have to say that I went through three. I was moved to three different biology classes in high school. I think in my freshman or sophomore year, and it just so happened. I don't know. I don't believe in coincidence. So there was obviously a reason for this. Every time I was moved, we had just gone through the reproductive portion of the course. In the first class, then I was moved to another biology class where they were just starting it. We went through that. Then I was moved to another biology class, the third one, and they had just started that again. So I got it three yes. times in 1 year. I'm thinking, okay, there's a message here somewhere.
Can I ask you, Richard, within the context of those classes, mm-hmm. were you ever taught about pleasure?
No.
Right.
Not at all.
So here's the disservice that we do to young people, because if we don't prepare young people, if we don't even just self-ownership of pleasure, just have it with yourself. And I'm going to speak from my own experience. Mm-hmm. I was one of the rare teens that did not have sex during her teens, but I was very sexual with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents never shamed me. They just taught me appropriate boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow having a strong orientation with myself, just this direct relationship, physical relationship, gave me the ability to see what was going on. And I did not suffer as my girlfriend suffered, going through very strange teenage relationships. Some of them were sexual far too young. Some of them were even became parents very young with teen pregnancy. Because I did grow up on a native reservation in Canada, so things are a little different there. And I think because I had such a strong anchor point within myself and all this intensity was still being expressed just safely with myself, that I chose not to engage. I could see what was happening and went, no, I think I'll wait. And I wasn't waiting for religious reasons. I was waiting really for emotional and relational reasons, that I didn't feel that the what was available to me, the teenage boys, were an option for me that would actually create a really fantastic experience. So, and I had parents, they were French Canadian, so I did learn about sexuality through their loving and through their consciousness. But a lot of children don't. We seem to think that if we shame children, they will behave better. But actually, it doesn't stop the behavior. It just creates people who are more disassociated with their experience.
Growing up in the Catholic Church and hearing about, of course, the sexual abuse that was happening, granted, horrific, awful kinds of stuff going on, but the conclusion that I came to extremely early on was that the reason why there is the problem that there is because the church refused to allow the West to marry and have and express themselves sexually with a partner, a wife or husband in this case, because with my first wife, she was a member of the Eastern Rite of the Catholic Church, Byzantine, and that church allowed its priests to marry. Now, it was still under the Pope in the 50s and earlier. And so when the West came to the Pope and said, well, the East gets to marry, can we? Rather than giving the right to the West, he took it away from the East. And so if you remove that ability to express yourself from your life, it's going to pop out, no pun intended here, in other places and in other ways. And that's, in my opinion, why we have a lot of the dysfunction in this country, as well as within the church, that we have had over the decades.
Yes, and other cultures will even, they call it solo practice. So if you want to be celibate, there's no pressure to relate, but you still, in these other cultures, they believe that if you don't understand how to be with this intensity of desire, let's say, sexual desire, and to utilize it in such a way that revitalizes your body, then it will act out in inappropriate ways. And so there were actually, and these are thousands of years old, these practices, ways that an individual that was celibate could still be able to move that energy in a creative way within their own body in such a way that would create a lot of inner peace. And that person would actually be a safe person to be around. They weren't misbehaving because they had an ability, a self-ownership, a sovereignty around their sexuality. But when we disassociate, it always creates neurotic relationship. It's the relationship that isn't healthy with whatever it is that we've dissociated with. And so in this case, it's sexuality. So I say that because we're at that third level of allowing people, give permission for that exploratory phase in a person's life. It's very important for Eros to mature and to have that kind of shame-free exploration so that we can discover what's actually true for us. And then at some point, and this may have happened to you, I'm not sure, so I'm curious to hear what happened with you. There's a point that I hear a lot. This is usually when the women come to me and they say, there's got to be more to sex than what I know. There's got to be more to this. And I think that that's the question that leads us into the fourth level of the evolutionary phase, which is then erotic expansion. And that's when a person will start getting curious about the deeper meditative aspects of sexuality or the more conscious aspects of sexuality. And they start seeking out alternative wisdoms to make sense of their reality. Now, what's really interesting here, Richard, is there was a researcher called Jenny Wade who wrote a book called Transcendent Sex. And she specifically, I think there was over 4,000 people who participated in her study. And she specifically had a look at people who had no idea that there were alternative ways, just normal people existing in the world having sex with their partners. And she was able to prove that within the human being, we all have the capacity to experience what she calls transcendent sex. It is a normal human function, but there's no orientation in our culture to help people understand that. So the subjects of her study were thoroughly confused, and a lot of them never even revealed to their partner that they'd had this experience. Now imagine living in a world where not only did we educate people on pleasure and that sexuality is natural and like breathing, and here's how we can be mature about it and responsible with it. But to also teach people, and here's what I love. It's called the state of relaxed arousal, which might sound like a paradox.
No, you can't have, that's impossible.
Right? Because the way that we make love in the West is it's usually excited and maybe even a little stress-oriented or goal-oriented.
Yes.
But the states of relaxed arousal, they've done some medical studies where they've examined in doing MRI scans of the brain during states of relaxed arousal. And what they found, this is amazing, they found that the centers of courage and self-esteem, creativity, and the center of the brain that actually leads to those transcendent experiences, we'll just call those, you know, when colors are more bright, let's mm-hmm. just say,
yeah.
feel a little magical about life,
yeah.
that those centers of the brain lit up when a person was experiencing a state of what's called relaxed arousal. That is what that fourth level of erotic evolution is looking at. How do we self-induce and get ourselves into, alone or with a partner, into states of relaxed arousal?
Hmm. I have heard the term misogynist used by many people. I've even heard men refer to themselves. They will openly, proudly admit that they're misogynists. And when I found out the word, what the definition was, I'm going, are you nuts? Now, when I'm walking the main street here in Santa Barbara, it's called State Street, and there are women and men walking my direction, and I'm walking past them, and I see a beautiful woman, or to me, what is a beautiful woman, because everybody sees everybody differently. If I don't get enough of a view of her once she's passed, too bad. I do not turn around to get another look. I find that that kind of behavior is that's really kind of crude. But I remember an experience with one of my sisters and my mother. They were over at my house. I think I was packing some things up, and they came across some drawing tablets of mine. And I had spent some time, more from a limited memory, because I hadn't had at that time that much experience with women, and so I hadn't seen that many. I was drawing the body parts of women in one of these drawing books, and my mother happened to pick it up. I even forgot that it was there. And normally, I might have gone, oh, let me have that. You don't need to see that. And she just flipped through it and thought nothing of it. It's like, oh, okay. That's interesting. That's not too bad. And that leads me to this. And I don't want to reveal anything about the processes of the Kwadoshka, but there is one experience I remember where we were all sitting around, and I think the men went first and then the women, and we would sit in such a fashion so as everyone was able to see us. Now, this was clothing optional, meaning there were none. And there was the description of the various physical types of male genitals and female genitals. And this was all non-sexual. This was a learning process. And, of course, then tied into that of each of those types were more of the psychological and or emotional aspects to a male with this particular type and a female with this particular type. And it was one of the most amazing educational processes that I had ever experienced, that I ever been through. I had to sit up there too and get defined. Yeah. Okay. And what is so interesting is how shame-based we are about our physical bodies from head to toe and everything in between, front and back. I mean, I look in the mirror and I don't have a huge one. I mean, it's not that big. And my wife keeps telling me, you're not overweight. You know, I've got a slight little paunch sticking out, but it's not hanging down over my belt or anything like that. I couldn't handle that. I'd be doing something to take care of that. But it's one of those aspects where we just have gotten so stuck on the outer image instead of the inner image.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how you address that in the work that you do with women, because I don't know if this is true. It might be that men are actually more self-conscious than women?
I think we live in a society that really benefits from everyone feeling insecure. So it's a lot harder to sell things if you're feeling happy with what you have and satisfied with life, and that you gain great pleasure purely from the act of breathing or regarding something beautiful, for example. Mm-hmm. If you're in a state of insecurity and you believe that everything that you need in order to feel good is outside of yourself, of course, then you're going to seek that. So when I work with women, we absolutely bring the attention back to self. And I have found that there's no way for me to move forward with even the conversation or any practices that we do for hormonal health or pelvic health unless we address something called body love. And so I actually have a very specific meditation that take women through their body, and basically you are apologizing to the parts of yourself that you don't like, and you're putting love there with your intent, with your touch. And it's just so powerful. I mean, I think that that one meditation alone creates so much transformation because of what it opens up to. If a woman doesn't really feel at home in her own body, it's going to be very hard for her to fully surrender to her pleasure. And I'm not just talking sexually, I'm talking in life too. Mm-hmm. Here's also the thing that why I said we were sexual beings. If we're sexual doings, that means we only engage with this idea every once in a while in a very certain kind of way. If we're sexual beings, and let's turn the word sexual into aliveness. If we are aliveness beings, then every moment is an opportunity for us to exercise our sensuality, to deeply feel the truth of our living body, and then to move into whatever activity that we're doing with a sense of integration and connection. And those kinds of people, they have very clear boundaries. So I teach boundaries a lot in this work. Many women have been brought up to be nice girls. Nice girls don't have healthy boundaries. And when you don't have healthy boundaries, that's when things happen. So it's very important for women to face, wow, this is my sovereign ground, this body, this physical space, and I get to choose what happens. How amazing is that? And it sounds like a really simple idea, but I am amazed at the amount of people where that is a foreign idea. As a living experience, conceptually, they like it as an idea, you know, out mm-hmm. of body and over there somewhere. Yeah. But to actually make it real, to live that truth, that is not that common. Mm.
Wow. Extraordinary stuff, I have to tell you. And I know that each one of us as individuals has to deal with this issue. One of the phrases that is often used, and you kind of alluded to it, when it comes to the sex act, is that our sexuality is not just about, and this is the term that's used, friction sex. Because mm-hmm. pretty much that's pretty much everything that there is in the West as far as that's what we think about. You know, that's what every encounter, male to female in general, that's what it's supposed to lead to. At least that's the common misconception. And sometimes, and guys would probably not admit to this for the most part in public, sometimes guys, they do just want to cuddle. They just want to be held or to hold or just to be close or what have you. And I've been involved, obviously, I've shared in terms of the Kwadoshka, but also with my second wife here, also we have experienced the various aspects of tantric sex. And of course, that was a big deal. You know, it's not so much a big deal anymore, but it used to be really fashionable. But we were involved in learning about it long before it was fashionable. And it was, again, for me, it was extraordinary because I had never expected. I no more expected to learn the various aspects and levels of sex and sexuality than I expected ever to go to Ireland, and I went twice.
That's awesome. Yes, so I love what you have to say about this. This is it's and what I'm hearing, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's also in alignment with what I teach, is that the solution to broaden the spectrum of our sexuality, because it actually is, if we're just looking to pornography as our main teacher, then of course friction sex is going to be what most people know because that's what's available. Mm-hmm. But if we allowed ourselves to actually utilize our sensuality and we engaged all of our senses, so that could mean sometimes that you're engaged actively in the act of listening. I like to do back-to-back with my partner. So I don't see him. I can feel him, and then I hear him. That's a beautiful way of connecting. Perhaps it's just sharing fragrances. One of my favorite things to do is go on a walk with my husband, and we'll have a flower that we've picked, a wildflower that has this beautiful fragrance, and we just pass it back and forth in silence, and it's the most beautiful, nourishing, connecting experience. Perhaps it's touch, where it could even be as simple as a foot massage, but there's a way in which we connect through touch, and it's touch that doesn't have an agenda. It's touch for the sake of the pleasure of touching, so that we use sensuality, say in our couple, but then we even expand it into our lives. Can we deeply taste the food that we're eating? Can we really enjoy that song that we love on the radio? Can we really, you know, maybe there's a smell, I don't know, of the ocean, because you love the ocean. So mm-hmm. that scent of the ocean is so beautiful. Can we let those things touch us so deeply that we're nourished by it? We're not starving. We're no longer beggars in our relationship to life and with each other. That's the gift of having a sensual nature.
You said earlier that your folks, as you were growing up and learning about your own sexuality, that they were open, or they just accepted that this is the way that you are and allowed you to do your own exploration?
Yes. So my parents grew up, both of them grew up with really intense Catholic religion. My mom went to school with nuns. My father went to school with priests. And their whole lives were dictated by that religion in people, French Canadians, who are very vivacious. So it's such a strange setting, if you can imagine. So when they got married, and they fell in love very young, I think they were 19, and they're still together. It's incredible. And they're still deeply in love and very sensual and connected. But when they decided to marry and the idea of children came along, they both felt it's so crucial to never bring shame into the picture, to always have celebration around the body and just teach healthy boundaries. So I grew up with this idea that sex, the only thing I knew about sex was that it was an act of love between my parents. And that I didn't even know a word, but that touching my own body, it just felt so exquisitely delicious. And there was no shaming that came with it. So I just got to enjoy different sensations and nourish that within myself in an environment of respect and love that my parents provided.
Mm. Well, that's to me, that's extraordinary, because that does not happen on a regular basis, especially here in the West. I grew up with four sisters and a brother, so my brother and my father and I were sort of outnumbered. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I would much rather live under a matriarchal society and system than patriarchal. I've seen how men have screwed things up. By the same token, I also acknowledge that you need both sides. You really do.
Yes.
So I'm hoping that over the course of the next few years, we get a little bit more of the feminine energy involved in the process of trying to solve some of our problems. But this whole aspect of this subject, was there a defining moment for you where you said, I need to go down this path because I need to learn so that I can teach other women about claiming their sexual sovereignty, and then hopefully getting the opportunity to teach men not only to honor a woman's sexual sovereignty, but also to claiming their male sexual sovereignty?
Absolutely. Yes, there was a defining moment. A few decades ago, I came into a direct relationship with death. And I had 2 weeks to live, and that had come from an experience of violent rape. And when my surgeon said, "That's it, you know, you need to call your family, put things in order," it was a very intense moment in my young mind, because when you're young, you don't know that you're mortal. So to face your mortality is just a really weird thing. And I remember being shocked and uncertain. And so when I phoned my mother, you know what she said? You need to leave the hospital, go see a funny movie, and laugh for a few hours. Mm-hmm. And so what happened with her not buying into what the surgeon had said or into the fear is I chose in that moment to defy even that. I defied death in that I chose life. And it was kind of impossible that I lived, but I did, obviously, because we're here, you know, 2 decades later. Mm-hmm. But that journey of that pain and the recovery of that incident led me on an incredible path of self-discovery, of solo cultivation, of reclamation, of a point where I don't consider myself a victim of rape. I never have. I didn't take that badge on. I have never worn it. I do consider myself that I've had that experience, but now I'm a fully integrated and thriving sexual, sensual woman who just loves life and is so excited to share my gifts with the world. And so I realized there is a reclamation journey. And even if we've never had trauma, just the fact that we've been socialized to disassociate with ourselves, that's enough to have the invitation to come back home to ourselves and really say, yes, I'm going to have a profound and beautiful relationship with this body and this being that is me.
In the current climate, I've heard comments from some women who obviously, and especially in the public light, have waited sometimes decades to speak out about this whole issue of sexual harassment. And I've actually talked with a few women who say they've even had certain experiences in their lives. One in particular who said to me, "Oh yeah, I had a doctor," this is where she worked, "who patted me on the behind, and I turned right around and I said, 'You do that again and I will break your arm.' And he never bothered her again." Now, certainly, we don't want people going around threatening one another, but by the same token, from where you are in terms of a woman claiming her sexual sovereignty, what would you offer as the first best, I don't want to say defense, but say action, if a male, and it can happen female to female too, crosses that line, but you don't want this thing to blow up into something huge that ends up in the newspapers or on TV kind of thing, or becomes part of this whole crazy malaise that's going on in this country?
Yeah, I think the first thing to say is when someone disrespects your physical space, you must stand your ground. And whatever way that is true to do that, that's why I encourage women, all women, to do a self-defense class. And most women who do self-defense never have to use it. The reason for self-defense is not so much to learn that you can smash someone's face. It's to learn that you can actually say no and really mean it. And it lives in your body. Like, you've crossed a line. I'm not going to let you cross any further. It's a very important thing. And we have to be willing to upset people, to disturb the peace, to even be called names, to, you know, just ruffle feathers a bit in that moment. And I think if we do it, there are gentle ways of doing it. I've had extreme ways where I've broken some noses, and I've had gentle ways where I've just basically said to the person, keep enjoying yourself. You know, don't stop on my behalf. I'm not going to join in on your fun as they were masturbating in front of me and trying to invite me in. But I didn't shame them and I didn't get angry. I just said, I'm not going to partake in that. And they obviously stopped and we engaged in a conversation for a few hours, which was fantastic. So there's a whole spectrum. So women need to trust, first of all, really trust that your instincts, you know when something's off. And it is important to say something. And then don't do it alone. If you're in a work setting, I would actually share what happened with more people. I have been in a setting where it was actually a woman who abused me, and I brought the abuse forward to everyone in the community. And I said, if you are all standing for the empowerment of women and sisterhood, this behavior cannot go on. And all I'm asking is an apology from the person and that this whole community take a stand where we don't allow this kind of behavior. So,
and at the same time, you use the word community. You need to get across to this person who crossed that line that you want them to be a part of the community too.
Well,
I mean, alienation seems to me counterproductive in one sense.
Obviously, there are levels mm-hmm. where there's extreme violence and a person's, you know, life is threatened. That's a whole other scenario than grabbing someone's butt.
Mm-hmm.
All of which are different degrees of disrespect. So actually, in some of my training, I teach 5 different levels of no. And so there is that. But if it's a person who is out of line, I've even had it with male friends where they were out of line. And I'm just like, you know what? That's not okay for me, but I really like you as a person. I just don't want to engage with you mm-hmm. on a sexual and sensual level. And I didn't shame them. And they're like, God, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean that. You're very beautiful. And I thought that you were flirting with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to clear that up. And then we continued having a great friendship. So obviously it's an individual base, you know, one thing that happens after another. But I can tell you, for a woman, you are not going to face this once. You're going to face this almost on a daily basis. And so having the resiliency, having the sovereignty to stand in yourself and go, okay, what are my limits? What do I really want out of this? Because here's what I want. I want to live with men and with women where we don't actually shame each other. We deeply respect each other. And if we do cross the line, we're able to say, hey, you crossed the line. And the other person goes, oh, right, I did. I'm really sorry. And they don't keep trying to cross the line.
Right.
Violence escalates for me if a person really does, like, is not listening. It continues to disrespect, which has happened to me, to the point of I had an experience where a gang had surrounded my girlfriend and I, and they were going to rape us. There was no question. And they were going to start with her because she was frozen in terror. And I was the one barking away a bunch of, you know, profanities to try to get them to leave. And they weren't listening. So I ended up having to bust the face of the alpha leader to protect my girlfriend, because the second they touched her, they crossed a major line. And I wasn't about to let them do whatever they were intending to do to her. And that got dissolved very quickly, because most of the time abusers are looking for victims. They're not looking for someone who's going to fight back and make a big stir.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, as I said, just different levels. Sometimes it's just an inappropriate word and you're like, don't talk to me like that. I don't want to be talked to that way. And you just say it.
Yeah.
Here's what I'd like.
Mm-hmm.
And then other times, if it escalates to the point where your life is in danger, you use whatever method you have to get out of there and get yourself safe.
Absolutely. Good advice. I want to thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us here on the program about your succulent revolution. And we encourage people to go to your website, which is Saida Desilets. And I'm going to spell that for you, folks. Don't worry. I'm going to give you the spelling of that. Saida is spelled S-A-I-D-A. And the last name is Desilets, which is D-E-S-I-L-E-T-S. And then put a .com after that. And we'll be linked to your website. And should you ever find yourself a long way from home, here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. It's extremely important, not only because of what's happening in this country in this day and age, but just in general to try to educate people about getting in touch with their own sensuality, their own sexuality, their erotic genius, and learning to be comfortable with self, so that then you can be comfortable, obviously, with others. And again, we're so grateful that you've taken so much time.
Thank you so much, Richard, and to all the listeners. It's been such a pleasure to be here.
I have three final questions for you before I let you go, and they are, first and foremost, who is Saida Desilet?
She's a wild and fun woman who's from French Canada, who just absolutely loves nature, is madly in love with her husband, loves to write poetry and dance, and just, I so want to live in a world where everyone is connected and creative and expressed.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
If I were to leave a legacy, it would be that human beings could be completely at home with their sexuality and take responsibility for the privilege of having a beautiful body.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
I really have a strong calling to ignite people, to see them switched on and lit up. And so my life's purpose, whether I do that through smiling at a waiter and just getting their eyes to light up, or speaking at a big conference and just igniting a whole room of people so that they're feeling like a massive yes and a daring to be who they really are, that for me is completely fulfilling.
That's exciting stuff, and I encourage folks to check out your website. We will be linked to you. And Saida, thank you again so much for the time, and I hope that we do get a chance to continue this conversation, be it in person or we do it again via Skype all the way from Australia or Canada or wherever you might be the next time we talk.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.